Well, now to proposals for an overhaul of the framework of New Zealand's surrogacy law would grant intended parents immediate rights after the birth of the child carried by a surrogate. Proposals for an overhaul of the framework come from the Law Commission, which has set out to decide and to determine who the legal parent is in surrogacy arrangements. Surrogate mothers would be entitled to more financial support and protection, including from exploitation. Currently, the surrogate mother holds the legal rights to parenthood until the intended parents complete an adoption process to take legal responsibility for the new member of their family. Reform of the framework of the law would remove that step, instead requiring the surrogate to hand over responsibility following a more comprehensive pre-approval process. Today, the Law Commission is publishing an issues paper on the review of surrogacy law, submissions on which are invited until 23rd of September. Children born from surrogacy are especially invited to have their say. Other proposed changes include giving children better information about their gestational mother and whakapapa. Principal Advisor of the Law Commission is Nicola Lambie. Tēnā koe. Welcome to 9 to Noon, Nicola.
Morena, Catherine. Thank you for having me.
So who are the various parties being considered here?
Yeah, so surrogacy is a really unique way to build a family. There are the people who want to have a child through surrogacy, and these are typically referred to as the intended parents. And surrogacy gives them the opportunity to have a child when they otherwise wouldn't be able to themselves. And then you have the woman who agrees to carry the child for them. We refer to her as a surrogate. And there are two types of surrogacy. There's either gestational surrogacy, which involves a fertility clinic and IVF technology, and an embryo is implanted into the surrogate and she carries the child. There's also traditional surrogacy, where the surrogate uses her own eggs and conception is achieved via artificial insemination. And traditional surrogacy arrangements have been practiced throughout history and can occur outside a fertility clinic. And then, of course, there is the child, which is the focus of the surrogacy arrangement.
So with the existing law, how does it apply to the two different kinds of surrogacy that you've told us about, one of which might involve the sperm and egg of the intending parents, which involve the egg of the gestational surrogate and the sperm of an intending parent? It's almost like there's a sense of ownership around these things, isn't it? Or there's a sense of what you're trying to do is to determine the sense of interest.
Yes.
So how have you gone about doing that in the different kinds of cases?
Yeah, so surrogacy, it's really interesting because you are almost splitting out those concepts of parenthood. So you have the social parenthood, who wants to be this child's parents. You also have the person who carries the child. But then also you have the genetics, and the genetics in some situations don't connect to either the intended parents or the surrogate, because sometimes you have donor egg and sperm. So we're really focused on proposing a framework that would capture all of these different scenarios. In terms of current regulation, under the Human Assisted Reproductive Technology Act, or the HART Act, gestational surrogacy arrangements have to go through a really robust pre-approval process. The independent ministerial committee called the ECART, or the Ethics Committee on Assisted Reproductive Technology, they have to approve any gestational surrogacy arrangements that occur within New Zealand. And that requires the parties to a surrogacy arrangement to have independent legal advice, to have counselling, to have independent medical advice, and the committee will approve the arrangement if it's satisfied that the surrogacy arrangement will safeguard the rights and interests of all the parties involved.
So rights and interests, there's also some other factors, what surrounds issues such as any funds that are available. There are some funds available to support a surrogate, but you can't commercially
The law is really complex when it comes to finances. At the moment, it says that you can't exchange valuable consideration. It doesn't clarify that surrogates can have their costs covered by the intending parents. And this causes a lot of uncertainty and anxiety for people who are involved. And it means that surrogates may be left out of pocket as a result.
Okay. All going well, everyone begins with expectations and ends with expectations, and something wonderful happens.
Absolutely.
Do we have examples where this is not what happens? And perhaps we should explain what is currently required of intending parents with respect to legal adoption. In some cases, this may include a parent who's perhaps provided, say, sperm.
Yes.
Still has to adopt.
Yes.
So could you explain the current legal situation, and then we'll talk about why it should change.
Yeah, absolutely. So under the law, it doesn't recognise surrogacy as a process that creates a legal parent-child relationship between the intending parents and the child. So the surrogate, because she gives birth to the child, will always be that child's mother, legal mother at birth. And if she has a partner, her partner will typically be the child's second parent. So that means that the surrogate bears all of the legal responsibilities for that child. It also means the intending parents have no rights or responsibilities for the child until they go through the adoption process.
So surrogacy does not in itself represent a change of those legal rights and responsibilities?
No.
Okay. You're recommending that at the beginning of the process, that's exactly what happens?
Yeah, so we're proposing, and we are really keen to get feedback on this, that with that safeguard in place already, the ECARD process, that pre-approved surrogacy arrangements, we should only be requiring intending parents and surrogates to go through one process. So if they've gone through that process, their surrogacy arrangement has been approved, and at the end of the process, all the parties are happy and in agreement, then the intending parents should be recognised as legal parents by operation of law. They shouldn't have to go to the family court to go through another process to be recognised as legal parents.
And is that currently what happens? There's a formal adoption legal family court process to go through, which can take how long?
Probably you're looking at around 6 months, and that's 6 months newborn baby's life. We all know that that is a very hard time.
Yeah. Did I hear you say something that this would apply if all the parties agreed?
Yes,
because this is important also.
Absolutely.
As we said, everyone starts out with an intention, but this is a massive experience for everybody. It can be a massive experience for everybody. Do you still allow for there to be a rethink if that's what the surrogate wants?
So what we're proposing is basically two ways that we can resolve legal parenthood and surrogacy. If all the parties are happy and in agreement, and we do propose that the surrogate should have an opportunity after the birth of the child to confirm her consent, then they should be able to get on with their lives, register the child's birth, end of story. If there is a disagreement, then that is something that the family court should be involved in. At the moment, because adoption is a consent-based process, if there's a disagreement, that's the end of the story. Because for an adoption order to go through, all the parties need to be consenting.
Does that slightly change the stress on one party versus another? Currently, the stress is on the intending parents having to go through a six-month process to adopt the child. But in this instance, would it put the stress perhaps on a surrogate who's changed her mind or is having some doubts to then go through the legal process?
I don't think it would make much of a difference for the surrogate, because if she decided that she had changed her mind, then the intended parents would have to go through. They would have to make the case to the court.
Right.
And even now, although you can't change legal parenthood if the parties aren't in agreement, what you would see is intended parents would try to seek guardianship or parenting, day-to-day care. So I don't think it's going to change that so much. And it's also really important to recognise that these are really rare situations. I mean, in 15 years since the Heart Act was introduced, we've only come across one case where the surrogate did change her mind. And according to reports, that case was one that didn't go through this pre-approval process. It was a private surrogacy arrangement.
Right. So then someone says, why change it at all? Tell me why people have told you it should change.
I mean, at its heart, the adoption process doesn't reflect the reality of these surrogacy arrangements. Surrogacy is when intended parents set out to create to build their family and create a child, and everyone has the same plan and expectations going into the surrogacy arrangement. It's very different to adoption, and that means that the adoption process doesn't really work well for surrogacy arrangements. It looks at what happens after the child is born and what's the appropriate outcome in relation to a child that's already there. But we would rather see those safeguards be put in place at the beginning of the process before any problems occur.
Where there have been problems, and I think there was only one case you've referred to, did that end up being a shared care arrangement between all the parties?
As far as we know.
Right. Do people tell you it is impacting on their experience of becoming parents and forming a family, having to go through this?
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to recognise that the family courts are doing a great job at recognising the significance and the importance of this adoption process. But we're told time and time again from intended parents that it's an ongoing anxiety that they feel until it's finalised. And equally, for surrogates and for their partners to have to sign up to a surrogacy arrangement knowing that they bear all the legal rights and responsibilities for that child is a big consideration.
You're also proposing some changes that would better protect the surrogate mother. How?
Well, the main thing we want to do is to ensure that she does have that opportunity to withdraw her consent after birth. And that's a really important safeguard that you'll see in many other jurisdictions to ensure that she's protected throughout the surrogacy arrangement. We also want to try and encourage traditional surrogacy arrangements, which at the moment can't access this pre-approval process. We want to open that up so that they can also participate and take advantage of the safeguards that provides.
And remind us, traditional surrogacy is where, say, the mother uses her own eggs?
Yes, the surrogate
uses her own eggs. Okay, and currently they can't be part of this process?
No, they can seek non-binding advice from the committee, but they can't go to the committee and get approved in the same way as a gestational surrogacy arrangement.
You alluded to it earlier that New Zealand family law places the interests of the child at the centre.
Yes.
In law. And how do you argue this proposal would do that?
Well, I think it's really important to always keep in mind what is in the best interests of the child. And we're really concerned that if within those, you know, six months or so between the child's birth and an adoption order being finalised, that child has no, or the intended parents have no legal responsibility for that child. And the child is left with a legal relationship to the surrogate and her partner when they don't plan to raise that child.
What is happening to the practice of surrogacy in New Zealand? Is it growing?
It's quite hard to pin down the statistics on this, but we think around 50 children a year are born as a result of a surrogacy arrangement, either within New Zealand or New Zealand intended parents going overseas.
Are there still quite a lot who will go overseas?
Yes.
Again, hard to...
Yeah, it's around 20 a year, we think, 20 children a year. And they go overseas for many different reasons. Mainly they can't find a surrogate in New Zealand, or they need to use donated eggs or sperm and they can't find a donor in New Zealand.
Long queues sometimes,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes.
The question also of children born from surrogacy, what do you want to hear from them? Now, obviously old enough to make a submission, but what do you want to hear from them?
Well, we want to hear what they would like the law to do. One of the big concerns we have is how do we protect children's rights to identity and information about themselves? The birth certificates only record legal parents. So your first birth certificate will just record the surrogate and her partner. Your second birth certificate will just record the intended parents. There's a gap there because it doesn't provide the child with all of the information that they may want around their genetic and gestational origins.
So what you're proposing would enable them to be able to get all the information?
Yes. And we've highlighted two options. One option is to expand the donor register that was established under the Heart Act to include surrogacy, or the second option is a more comprehensive review of the birth registration and birth certificate process.
Thank you, Nicola. And how can people make submissions until when?
Submissions are open until the 23rd of September, and they can visit our Law Commission website or go to surrogacyreview.nz.
I'm curious, was this something the Law Commission instigated, you know, off its own volition, or was there some sort of request from Parliament to do so?
So the Minister responsible for the Law Commission, Chris Farfoy, Minister Little, when he was the Minister of Justice,
requested
we do this.
Thank you very much. Nicola Lambie is Principal Advisor at the Law Commission.